From Springfield, this is State Week, a program of analysis and commentary on the events that made news this past week in Illinois state government and politics.
Let's start with something that should, well, be easy to say. It's wrong to snatch a person off the street and ship them to a foreign gulag with no chance to defend themselves in a court of law. It's time to fight everywhere and all at once. Never before in my life have I called for mass protests, for mobilization, for disruption. But I am now. We must castigate them on the soapbox and then punish them at the ballot box.
It's Governor J.B. Pritzker. He took his message across the country. He's also been on TV just recently. Pritzker on the national stage. We'll talk about that. And also, we remember the former governor, George Ryan, who died last week. He was 91 years old. That and more coming up on State Week. I'm Sean Crawford in Springfield. Our panel includes Charlie Wheeler, professor emeritus and former director of the Public Affairs Reporting Program at the University of Illinois Springfield. Charlie's also been a longtime reporter and observer. And our guest this week, Scott Reeder, a reporter with the Illinois Times based in Springfield. Scott, thanks for being with us on the show.
Great to be here.
And Scott, I'll start with you. The governor, fiery speech there in New Hampshire. We just heard a couple of clips of it. There have been a lot of criticisms from the right about this speech. Some people think that he was saying that there should be violence against the administration or against the Republicans. But he says he urged resistance and mobilization. He pulled back on that idea that he was preaching violence. But basically, it did wrinkle some feathers on the right. What did you think of what he had to say?
Well, I think it's a little ironic that Trump supporters are criticizing Pritzker after January 6th. I mean, I didn't take that Pritzker's remarks as to calling for violence. I took it as calling for demonstrations, calling for vocal speech against the policies of the Trump administration. I think that they really think the opponents of Trump's deportation policies need to speak up.
He sounded at times like, I guess I would term it, a fed-up Democrat. He wasn't happy with certainly what the Trump administration's doing, and he sounded very unhappy with his own party, even without naming them necessarily, called out do-nothing Democrats. I mean, this seems like somebody who's angling to be a candidate at the national level.
Yeah, I think, I mean, that's the worst-kept secret in Springfield. He wants to run for president. But, I mean, how effective a run he'll have is kind of an open question. He certainly can self-finance a run for president, but as we all know, it takes a lot more than that to become a president. I mean, there's been lots of wealthy people who have run for president unsuccessfully. Look at Ross Perot and others. I mean, it's not. There's other things that come into play. You know, I'm not sure Pritzker is photogenic enough or has the gravitas to project himself as an authority figure. I could be wrong. I mean, I was dismissive of Donald Trump early on when he was running, and look where I am now. So, I don't have a crystal ball, but I just wonder if Pritzker can appeal to a broad stream national Democrats. I mean, he's running on the far left, but will that branch of the Democratic Party embrace a billionaire? I don't know.
Yeah, Charlie, I heard a pollster on NPR just a couple of weeks ago talking about J.B. Pritzker, and they didn't have anything bad to say about him. They just said that hardly anybody outside of Illinois knew who he was. Do you think that's changing a bit? I mean, going on the national stage, going on these TV shows, late night TV, all the news talk shows, certainly helps with that. And speeches like this one do get people's attention. What do you think at this point for J.B. Pritzker?
Well, I'll echo what Scott said. I have no crystal ball. I have no idea what he's going to do. And I would venture to guess that J.B. Pritzker himself hasn't made up his mind exactly what he intends to do. And the immediate question is, should he run for another term as governor. But the national attention that he's gotten through this speech in New Hampshire, through another podcast he did, through being on, I think it was Jimmy Kimmel's late night show, it's still too early to know whether or not he's going to run for president, I think. And there's also some debate, if he decides to run for president, should he then step down as governor, or should he continue as governor? Pros and cons both ways. So I'm not sure, and I'm not a prognosticator, because if I were, I would not be on the show. I'd be at the off-track betting parlor in downtown Springfield.
Yeah, you weren't betting that there'd be an American Pope. You weren't thinking that either. But Charlie,
no, I would bet heavily against that.
But Charlie, let's say that he does decide to run again. There are pluses and minuses for that. I think I was thinking about this the other day. You know, what happens is on your watch if you're the governor, and you don't have as much time to travel the country and campaign. You sometimes get stuck having to deal with the issues that are here at home. You could flip a coin on whether or not it's a good idea for him to do it. We've certainly watched other people who have run for president while they were in office.
And there's another question then. Should he decide to run, who will be his running mate? Because as we know, the current Lieutenant Governor, Juliana Stratton, is running for the U.S. Senate. So obviously she will not be on the ballot as a Lieutenant Governor candidate in the March primary. And so that would be a key question also. If he intends to run for president and he's running for governor, who is his lieutenant governor candidate? Is this someone who can step in immediately and take the reins of government if the governor is heading to D.C.? So those are all questions that will be answered in the future, but it's too early to make any definite statements. It's all a lot of speculation.
Yeah, Scott, we can't read the tea leaves here, but certainly this is a huge decision for Pritzker coming up. And any thoughts of yours of whether or not he should stay in or whether he should go all in, put all his chips in, and run for president?
You know, Ronald Reagan and Jimmy Carter ran for president successfully as former governors. George W. Bush, Bill Clinton ran for president as sitting governors. I can see arguments for both sides. You know, the traditional view is it's a lot easier to fundraise when you're a sitting office holder. But, you know, is J.B. Pritzker ever going to fundraise? I mean, he can self-finance a campaign. So, you know, I could see it going either way. I really can. I mean, if it was a normal politician, I would say, oh, yeah, he's going to run for governor and then run for president. But when you have somebody with that vast amount of wealth, I could see him saying, yeah, I can self-finance. People will still answer my phone calls. If I was going to bet, I'd say 55% chance he doesn't run for governor, 45% chance he does.
You mentioned whether or not he has the gravitas to be a serious contender for president if he decides to make that move. I would have agreed with that statement, that question, I guess, just a couple of weeks ago. But when I listened to him in New Hampshire, that sounded more fiery than I've really heard him in most cases. And honestly, he seemed to have more gravitas in that speech than I've heard from other Democrats.
And if you're talking about gravitas, look at the guy we got in the White House now. What the heck measure of gravitas does he have?
I consider Donald Trump the great mystery of my life. I don't get the appeal at all. The only thing I can say is I think he's extremely appealing to a certain group of voters who want to stick the finger in the eye of the man. I mean, he's a protest candidate. He's somebody that people who are angry with the system are using. Now, here's the problem. I mean, I really wonder, I mean, with Pritzker, you know, he's running to the left, but can a billionaire with inherited wealth appeal to the Bernie Sanders folks in the world or the AOC folks? I mean, I just think that's a really hard sell. Now, that said, there have been wealthy Democrats who have run for office, run for president and done well. You know, I think of FDR, I think of JFK, but that you have to go back 60 years or more than 60 years to find somebody who's pulled that off on the Democratic side. I'm not there yet.
And you can also say that Donald Trump, whether you like Donald Trump or not like Donald Trump, the first term, if he can get back to maybe something more like his first term in office, which I think he could have won a second term had it not been for the pandemic, that was the issues, you know, that seemed to resonate with a lot of voters, economy, things of that nature, even the tighter border security. I think it depends on if we're going to see more of the chaos we've seen over the last couple of months. Are we going to get to something that's a little more at the medium level of Donald Trump? So we'll see where that goes. But to show how that Pritzker is on the minds, I think, of the Trump administration, this week, the Department of Homeland Security Secretary Kristi Noem actually came to Springfield, right here, the seat of state government, and blasted Pritzker when it came to his sanctuary policies and his policies regarding immigration. That being said, there was a lot of controversy with this appearance that happened this week in Springfield. And Scott, you were there. Fill us in on what made this so controversial.
Well, you know, they had all the reporters show up at the airport 2.5 hours before the press conference, which I've never had experience before. We loaded up into vans, and they wouldn't tell us where we were going. It was very weird. And they drove us out to the middle of this neighborhood in Springfield. And, you know, I'm kind of like, why are we here? You know, it didn't register until she got behind the podium in front of this house that this was Emma Schaefer's house where she'd been murdered. And, you know, 38 years in journalism, I have never, ever seen a politician use a murder scene as a backdrop for a press conference.
And Scott, let me just interrupt you. Emma Schaefer was a young lady from Springfield. She was murdered allegedly by a man who she'd had a relationship with, whose legal status was in question. He has been on the run since this incident occurred. There's been some speculation that he was in Mexico, but it was in front of her home is where this news conference took place.
Yeah, I mean, Secretary Noem says she thinks he's in Illinois. Well, why was she basis that on? She didn't say. I mean, you know, Springfield police say they have had some indications he might be in Mexico. They have some indication he might be in the U.S., they really don't know. I mean, here's the problem I have. There's a lot of problems I have with this. One is she came off like being an undocumented person in the United States inherently makes you more likely to commit violent crimes. Well, this fellow was brought into the U.S. as a child by his mother. He was raised in the United States. This is the culture he is a part of. We bear responsibility for what he has become. You can't just label an entire group of people, immigrants, as being one thing or another. Emma Schaefer was a progressive activist. She was very supportive of the immigrant community in Springfield. She was very much opposed to Donald Trump's policies. Her parents were literally over across town protesting Noem's visit. I don't know if they knew that she was showing up at their daughter's former home, but they were that much opposed to it, and they still chose to use her home and make her the poster child for why illegal immigrants shouldn't be in the United States.
Yeah, Charlie, your thoughts on this too?
Well, I second what Scott said. I would use the term despicable to describe Kristi Noem. One of the things she said, and this is a quote, governors like J.B. Pritzker don't care if gangbangers, if murderers, rapists, pedophiles roll free in his state. And she said this in front of Emma's home. If they are here illegally, he's going to protect them. Well, I've heard a lot of campaign hyperbole in my days, but that is a flat-out lie. And she lied later on when she said that there's no cooperation. And as a matter of fact, the U.S. Marshals had been working right from the time that the murder was discovered, had been working with local law enforcement to try and find this guy. So it was just despicable. And the fact that she said, well, I tried to talk to the parents. Well, how hard would that be to find out where they are?
Especially when you're the head of Homeland Security, you think you might be able to look up a phone number pretty easily?
Or just talk to her friends. I mean, She was well known. A lot of people knew her. I could have found that out.
Yeah. I mean,
and that was just one lie after another. It was just really nauseating.
I've not seen a politician stoop to that level ever.
It was not done for the sake of anybody here in Springfield or in Illinois. She was doing it for the TV cameras, and it would be on Fox News nationwide. As I say, I have absolutely no use for that kind of rhetoric.
Yeah, Scott, also there were some local Republicans, I guess you'd say here, state lawmakers who also showed up for this event.
There were state lawmakers. I will say this. I strongly suspect they were in the same boat as the press. I know that I was calling around the night before trying to figure out where the press conference was. And I talked to some state lawmakers, and they didn't have a clue what they were going to. They knew they were going to be there. I suspect they showed up in the vans too, got behind the podium, and then that's when she started speaking. Is when they realized that this was a murder scene. I really suspect they didn't know what they were getting into. Now I'm not making excuses for them, but I suspect that some of them who showed up would not have if they'd known all the circumstances.
Mm. Well, let's save a little bit of time here because I think something else happened over the last week that I think is worthy of some discussion, and that is the death of George Ryan, former Illinois governor, longtime state official here in Illinois. And I want to get both of your responses on this. But, Charlie, you covered him for many years.
George was a very complicated person. He was someone who, in my estimation, really grew in his time in office. And I say that in the sense that he was not an ideologue. He didn't have a well-thought-out conservative philosophy or progressive philosophy, but he reacted to things as he saw them. He was one of the guys, for example, who voted to restore the death penalty back in the early 70s here in Illinois. Yet he was also the individual who was very instrumental in clearing death row. And it was because when he was actually faced with the reality of having to sign the execution warrant for an individual, he agonized over it, and there was no doubt but what this guy was guilty, a guy named Andrew Coccarellis. He was part of a crew called, I think they were called the Rippers, and they were like a satanic cult. They abducted women, tortured them, brutalized them, murdered them, and Coccarellis was sentenced to death. But shortly thereafter, another person on death row was found to be innocent. Reporting done by students at Northwestern University found out that Andrew Porter really hadn't committed these crimes for which he was convicted. And that weighed on George's mind also. And the thing that got me about the Coccarellis case was Andrew was a mope. He was following the leader of this satanic cult, a guy named Robin Gecht. And he wound up not being sentenced to death. He was sentenced to, he was sentenced for like 70 years in prison or something like that. And as a matter of fact, he is now at the Danville Correctional Center. He actually, if he lives long enough, his parole date is in 2042 when he'll be 88 years old. So I thought there was sort of unfairness in that the guy who was the mastermind doesn't get the death penalty, but one of the mopes does. So those were the kind of things that weighed on George and led him to finally decide he was going to clear out death row, because he said, how can you really know if this person is guilty or not? And who am I to sentence someone to death?
Scott, you worked at the State House for the newspaper chain that included his hometown newspaper from Kankakee, the Daily Journal. Your thoughts on George Ryan?
Charlie uses the word complicated. I use the word more pragmatic. He grew up in a political machine in Chicago. Everybody knows about the Chicago political machine, which was very strongly Democratic. It was exactly the same in Kankakee, only it was strongly Republican. And the machine was run by the small family who I worked for many years. They owned the newspaper and they owned the radio station, and they were the most prominent family in town, and they ran the Republican machine in the community. And George was a product of that machine. He was somebody who did favors for friends. He was somebody who, I don't think he ever became wealthy because of his time in office. I mean, he was just somebody who viewed politics as being very retail, being very much doing, you know, helping those that help you, sort of thing. I mean, he was kind of very old school, and in many ways, very much like a Mike Madigan or an Emil Jones or some other characters. I mean, although both those men were Democrats, they considered him, George, a close friend of theirs. I mean, they socialized with him. They did a lot of things with George.
Had George grown up in Chicago, he would have been a Daily Democrat.
Exactly. I always, you know, I never had any problems at all with Rob Blagojevich's convictions. There was no question you're dealing with raw corruption there. He stepped way beyond the pale in a lot of the things that he did. But with George Ryan, it was a very different situation in my mind. I think George Ryan functioned pretty much the way Illinois government functioned for decades. I mean, raising money from the people who work for you, patronage employees, and using that money to run for office or to strengthen your power base. I mean, I love Jim Edgar, but Jim Edgar, when he was Secretary of State, did exactly the same thing. I mean, he raised money from his employees. Everybody was expected to buy so many fundraising tickets from him for him. Alan Dixon before Jim Edgar did the same thing. I mean, this wasn't a new concept that George came up with, and he got into trouble because the federal government had come in and said, we need to increase the requirements to be a truck driver, and they call it a commercial driver's license or a CDL, and that was administered by the states, and suddenly people were having trouble passing this test. And I know bright people who have taken the commercial driver's license test and failed. I mean, it's not an easy test. As you know, truck driving is a job that, often attracts people who are new immigrants that aren't maybe not fluent in English. You get lots of different people. These people were struggling to pass the test. The trucking companies were struggling to fill positions, and suddenly, I think independently of each other, these clerks working in these driver's license facilities where they weren't paid particularly well and were expected to buy these $50 or $100 tickets to go to fundraisers, came up with this bright idea, why don't I just sell the tickets to these trucking company executives that want to get their people passed, and then I'll just pass their people, And that happened under George's watch. Now, did George orchestrate that? I never saw any evidence of that at all. But he had a political climate where that was possible. I think that he should have known. He should have done things to have prevented that. I have no doubt on that. So he ended up serving a few years in prison. I always viewed him as more of a tragic figure than a scoundrel, is the way I would view it. In many ways, he was a very good person. He was married for more than 50 years. I mean, his wife died while he was in prison. People who worked for George stayed loyal to George even after his conviction. They were extremely loyal group of people. Having said that, I will say some of the people George surrounded himself with were not good people. They were political friends rather than personal friends. And you know what the difference, Sean, between a political friend and a personal friend is? A personal friend will say, George is my friend. I'm not going to do that because that would hurt George. A political friend will say, I'm a friend of George. I can get away with this. And I think that George was not very diligent in monitoring what people who worked for him were doing. Now, I'm not saying everybody who worked for him was bad, but there was a fair number of people that were not not good people around him. It's a sad story of how George's political career ended, but he did a lot of good things while he was in office. He was really the last governor that we've had in Illinois that effectively worked across the aisle and made deals and got things done he was a very different type of candidate, of a politician. I mean, something I don't think we're going to ever see somebody like a George Ryan back in office, because our political culture has changed so much.
And I would say we may not have ever known about this, what was going on with the licenses, had it not been for the accident that killed some kids, the Willis family. So that's a story people can look up. We're about out of time, so I don't want to go into it too much. But that certainly was a tragic story in its own right, and it led to George Ryan's downfall eventually. Let me go to our notes from the field, though. Charlie, we'll start with you this week.
Despite signs of a slowing national economy, the Illinois Flesh Index for April remained stable at 102.4, and that was reported by U of I Professor Emeritus Fred Geertz. And he says, quote, "The economic uncertainty that has impacted both consumer and business expectations, as well as slightly negative GDP, gross domestic product growth in the first quarter, has yet to impact Illinois." Professor Geertz compiles the Flesh Index for the University's Institute of Government Public Affairs each month. And the legislature's fiscal gurus, the Commission on Government Forecasting and Accountability, came out with a report showing that the revenue projections for the upcoming fiscal year have improved despite the economic volatility. And that will come as good news as lawmakers are getting ready or hoping to get a budget passed by the end of this month. The latest update projects for FY26, the coming fiscal year, $54.5 billion in revenue in the general funds. Now, that's $266 million more than their March projection, but it's still $470 million below the governor's February projection. Although this is based on existing law, and Pritzker has proposed a number of changes that would raise almost $500 million more in FY26. So the report also noted that the federal government could at any time decrease financial aid to states, creating more uncertainty.
All right. And Scott?
Well, I just a curious note. Kent Gray, a local Springfield lawyer who is a very strong Trump supporter, seems to be strong in the running for U.S. Attorney for Central Illinois. He has interviewed with Congressperson Mary Miller and with Congressman Darren LaHood. He has interviewed with folks with the Department of Justice for the position. Wouldn't be surprised if he is the next U.S. Attorney for Central Illinois.
All right. Well, that's all the time we have for this episode of State Week. Our panel included Charlie Wheeler and Scott Reeder with the Illinois Times. Look for State Week where you get your podcasts through the NPR app and at nprillinois.org. I'm Sean Crawford. Join us next time.
Been listening to State Week, a program of commentary and analysis of events in Illinois state politics and government. State Week is produced in the state capitol by public radio station NPR Illinois. This is IPR, Illinois Public Radio.